Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Edition of Covered in Glory, and Brett, back is the operative word. We took a week off, but we are here to cover the Premier League and the Premier League only today as we get into the swing of things. How did you spend your week off? I imagine you spent your week off in your soccer podcast watching even more soccer since you did not have to prepare to talk about soccer. Am I right?
I did exactly what I told you I'd do. I hosted my own podcast by myself, just did my own one-man version of Covered in Glory that doesn't publicly air. No, I did just get to sit and relax. It was kind of fun to just flip through games and not have to worry about keeping up on bets or seeing if I was going to embarrass myself this week. So it was just more of an information thing. And then we had Champions League this week too. So that was fun to kind of have just a straight thing of soccer and not having to worry about if I was going to look smart or stupid if my bets hit or not.
Yeah, well, you know, you've been plenty good this year. I think you're still positive on the year, though you did lose February to me after running off 4 or 5 months straight. And so you finally came back to earth, but I have a feeling March where you will start to get afloat again. Before we jump into a hell of a Premier League slate, Brett, like really, we have an awesome weekend ahead of us. I wanted to take a second to talk about some of the market that we have not really talked about thus far. And that is the player of the year odds. We are now getting down to the depth of it. We have plenty of evidence of who has been great this season and who is deserving of the trophy, but we have not discussed it. It has been in the news quite a bit recently because Phil Foden has rocketed up the odds recently. Just to set the table, the favorite is still Rodri at plus 225. Foden is all the way up to plus 350, just going way up the chart. Declan Rice is plus 500. Erling Haaland is plus 550. Saka is plus 600. Salah is plus 600. After that, we're talking about, you know, people that are a lot longer odds. So when you hear those numbers, what is most surprising to you about the options in front of us?
I kind of feel like it's interesting that Rodri is the favorite, aren't you? I mean, we appreciate Rodri on this podcast. We've gone on and on about the things that he does to control the game that aren't goals and assists and things that are directly related, although he does those things as well. But it just seems interesting that in the biggest league in the world, we're still talking about a holding midfielder as being the favorite. Isn't that, I mean, it just seems weird, doesn't it?
Well, I think it seems weird to your American brain, right? Like, you've been trained to think that a defensive player basically can't win the highest award in their sport. Like, there's no way JJ Watt is ever going to win. He could have 100 sacks and they would still give it to a quarterback. Like a Heisman, like there's no way a defensive winner is ever going to win like the Heisman Trophy. You know, Gobert is not going to win the MVP. Like, this just doesn't happen in America, which is another reason why I love the Premier League so much. They're actually looking for the player with the greatest impact. And while it's often an offensive player, there is a bit of a precedent for more defensive-minded contributions leading to this award. Van Dijk won it in 19. Let's see here. My guy, N'Golo Kante, won it in 15. John Terry won it in 05. So this isn't just the award for the best goal scorer. It isn't just the award for the guy who has the slickest assist. It's not any of that. They're actually looking for the player of the year. And if they look for the player of the year, I think it is Rodri.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Ruben Diaz also won like the football writers player of the year, whatever that was, too. And that was the year that City had that just incredible, impenetrable defense. And they kind of recognized him as the guy behind it. I think it is great. I love the point that you made up, too. I think this is another reason to kind of appreciate the sport. Is the NFL MVP award has become, well, who is the best quarterback in your opinion award, right? No one, like you said, JJ Watt could have 100 sacks, you wouldn't win it. Or TJ Watt, sorry, at 100 sacks, wouldn't win it. It doesn't matter who It just means the best quarterback is going to get it that year. So I do like it. It's just, like you said, it's a shock to my American brain, because it's like we have players like Haaland, Mo Salah. You know, Ollie Watkins is 16 goals for a surprising Villa team, and you know, he's up there in the odds. I actually think one of the more interesting bets would be him as maybe the top goal scorer, especially because he has a game coming against your favorite team, Spurs. He might notch a couple there. That'll come up later in the show. But I do think it's really cool that we're starting to we follow a sport that's really starting to recognize these guys. And Rodri, I think the reasoning behind him being the favorite, and the reasoning why it would be hard for me to bet against for anyone else, is there was that very clean break where he was out of the City lineup and they looked like dog crap. And I think that that still sticks in everybody's mind, that it was a one-to-one. Rodri didn't play. City looked bad. And when De Bruyne, and that was the other thing too, De Bruyne was out during that stretch and everybody was like, they can't miss Rodri. So I think the narrative is too strong for me, even though I think, you know, Saka's deserving of it. I think Ollie Watkins is interesting. I think especially kind of this late career like boost that he's had in his late prime here is interesting for Watkins. But the narrative for me is just way too clean for Rodri to get this award, especially because it looks like with Liverpool's injury problems that they are going to probably end up winning the league this year. And I just think that it's going to be impossible to get anybody else, you know, ahead of him at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you made the key point about his absences. We've talked about that in the past, how when he's missing, you actually appreciate him more than when he's on the field because it's just so glaring. And I think it's great that the voters are so sophisticated for this award that they might recognize it and not just follow some lesser narrative. Although we have said his name several times here. You said Ollie Watkins at 16-1, but he's still behind Haaland. And Haaland at plus 550, like, immediately gets my brain turning. He won this award last year. When he had 36 goals, I believe. He only has 18 now, so maybe this is a little bit of like, okay, well, he's failing to meet the high standards that he already set, so he can't be the player of the year. But we also have, 10 games left? He's going to end up, if he's anywhere on form, between 25 and 30 goals. I think he's going to win the Golden Boot. Like, you just threw out Watkins. Watkins is two behind him. Haaland is minus 667 at Caesars to actually win that. Watkins is, let me see here, Watkins is plus 650 to catch him and exceed him. But if Haaland ends up at like 25 or 30 goals, I think 550 seems a little bit too high, unless they just don't want to give it to him again.
Yeah, well, I think for me, he would have to get to 30. That, like you mentioned, the number of goals he'd have to get to, especially after last year. I think to surpass Rodri, given what we talked about with the narrative, with that clean one-to-one context of him being out in City going through their worst stretch of the year, I think Haaland would have to go off. So there's a couple of things for me that would have to happen. City would have to win the league for sure, and it would have to be, without a doubt, the Haaland show from here to the end of the year for him to get ahead of Rodri for me. The guy that I would be interested in, I think, you know, if you're looking at anybody, is Saka's odds are pretty decent still too. And, you know, there is still that window where Arsenal win the league. And I wonder where do you sit with him if they win? If Arsenal win, which...
Hell no.
No.
If Arsenal wins, I mean, like, I hear you. I'm sorry. I cut you off a little bit too dismissively. But if Arsenal wins, their defense has to be recognized, even though they're on this offensive tear right now. And they can recognize it with one player, and it's Declan Rice.
Yeah.
And so, like, if the voters are going to look at what he's done on both sides of the pitch, and Saka hasn't, like, exactly carried them offensively, they've been getting offensive production everywhere, including from Declan, I think there's no way that Saka would get the votes over Declan Rice, even if they won the league. And therefore, I'd rather play him at plus 500 than Saka at plus 600.
Yeah, I mean, do you think this is pretty much, if there's an Arsenal player that wins it, Arsenal has won the league? If there's a City player that wins it, City has won the league? You think is that how it goes? Is there any way that you see a crossover? I definitely don't think City can win the league and an Arsenal player can win the player of the year, even if Saka has like 15 goals in the end run in here. But do you think there's any way that the City player could still win it if they finish second?
Well, it's pretty unusual, right? Like, the last four players of the year are Haaland, Salah, and KDB twice, and then Van Dijk won it the year Liverpool won it. And so, like, it usually follows one or the other, even back to Leicester City, right? Mahrez won it when Leicester City won the league, when I'm sure there were other guys that probably had better individual seasons, but they seem to want to recognize the champion. So you have to be, like, so far clear and away better than any player on the champion to actually win the award that I would have a hard time finding, like, Declan Rice winning it when Rodri's lifting the cup. Like, I don't see that quite happening, even though it is possible. I think if, you know, like, if Liverpool won and Haaland had 28 goals or 30 goals, like, I don't know if who would win it, Salah or Van Dijk or Haaland. Like, that scenario is a little more interesting than the one where you try, because they haven't had one dominant player and they've had so many injuries, than the one where you try to paint where Arsenal wins, but City somehow, City wins, but Arsenal somehow wins the player of the year.
Yeah, the Liverpool, the outcome where Liverpool holds on to win the title and how that would impact the player of the year race would be fascinating to me. I would really love to see what happens there because, as you mentioned, Salah's been out. Van Dijk hasn't been a dominant Liverpool team. You couldn't even give it to Alisson because he's been hurt. So, yep. Trent Alexander-Arnold's been out. Like, it's going to be really weird if they win the league. I want to see what happens with the player of the year because you can't immediately associate, as you said, it's been very balanced for them. You can't immediately associate a Liverpool player with the player of the year, even if they hang on to win the league, because it really has been a collective thing for that team. It would be an amazing, that's why I think it would be an amazing accomplishment if they won, but to honor an individual off that team would make that player of the year award very intriguing.
Well, if you're sitting up on Merseyside right now, or you're sitting here in America wearing your Liverpool kit, there's worse ways to light a fiver on fire than Darwin Nunez, player of the year. Darwin Nunez right now is plus 9,900 to win that award. And if they win the title, it's going to be partially on the back of the chaos agent. So since nobody on Liverpool has a firm grip on it as like the clear player of the year right now, and we consider a run-in where they actually win the title and he bangs in 10 to 15 goals over that 10 run stretch, like, I don't know, I'd put five on that versus I'd put five on Salah at 6-1.
I mean, I definitely feel like if you're betting Liverpool to win the title, if you have a futures ticket out there and your math has told you that Liverpool is going to come home with this title, I feel like you got to throw something on Darwin. Like, I just don't know. Like, I don't, I mean, if you're already there, if you have figured out you've been modeled something or your gut's telling you this, if you think Liverpool is winning the league, I think you got to throw a little something on Darwin. Cause I think you're right. He is their bell cow right now. I mean, Salah's, you know, injury issues, and, you know, have him in doubt for the City match. He's had the hamstring injury and then it's been described as like a muscular fatigue now. So I don't think Salah has any chance of winning it. Trent's been out too long. Alisson's been out too long. The Liverpool defense hasn't been the same. Like, if you're betting Liverpool, sprinkle a little bit on Darwin. Sprinkle it on top.
And he just got that match winner last week, so you've already got, like, the highlight reel starting to roll. So that, if you're going to play a long shot, he's probably the best one, but I don't think they're going to hold on. We'll talk a little bit more about the actual title race as we get into this week's game, because we have a potential title contender leading us off with City versus Liverpool. But just to read the odds off, it is City minus 110, Liverpool plus 205, Arsenal plus 3,300 to win the league. So if you're thinking about Darwin, you're thinking about how this affects the player of the year, that's how the actual title race is being handicapped right now.
Yeah. Well, I just want, if you are out there and you are brave enough to do it, please tweet at us with your ticket. I want to see the people who are going to stand Darwin on this end run in.
I know. And if regression comes for him, I mean, he's generated enough goal opportunities that if he suddenly becomes a little more clinical, that's their best shot.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely the best case for it, is imagine if Darwin goes on a hot finishing run.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he's second on the team with 13 overall in all competitions, and he only has 10 total. So if he gets hot, if we get Darwin that gets hot, even if it's fluky for the rest of his career, if Darwin gets hot, you're going to be happy of that ticket.
Yeah, and that said, if we actually think Liverpool's title hopes rest on Darwin Nunez getting hot for a sustained stretch of matches, Manchester City at minus 110 is the bet of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that's a great way to look at it too.
All right. Well, let's not push it off any longer. We have one of the biggest games in the fixtures of the year. Let's take a break and then dive into City versus Liverpool.
You know, when the conversation turns Stampers, I always go with my number one as Caesars. Let's talk about them a little bit, shall we? Tickets to the game, merch, meals at iconic restaurants, stays at Caesars Palace. All this can be yours when you bet with Caesars Sportsbook. Win or lose, every bet earns rewards credits, which you can redeem across the empire. Now, if you haven't started yet, register using this code. Listen up. Omaha Full. The word Omaha and the word full. And then you place your first bet up to $1,250. If you win, great. If you keep those winnings, but if you lose, you'll get your stake back as a bonus bet. 21 and over only. Offer valid and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Massachusetts, Maryland, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager. Returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bonus bet, $1,250. Bonus bet expires 14 days after receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelplinema.org. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harrah's, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER or West Virginia, 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, Brett, enough foreplay. We've had enough time. Let's go ahead and dive into it. Liverpool first at 63 points versus Manchester City second at 62 points. This game is Sunday at 11:45 a.m. City is plus 125. Liverpool is plus 190. The draw is plus 270. Caesars has City at minus half a goal at plus 125 and Poole at minus 160. So, Brett, every year when the fixtures come out, City making their trip to Anfield is always one of the matches that you have to circle as being critical to the title race. And now we're in a scenario where they're actually only separated by 1 point with 11 matches left. So is this about as big as a game can get in March in the Premier League?
Yeah. I mean, I am, you know, we watch so much throughout the year because we have to do the show. And so in some ways, a lot of it gets deadened for me because I'm just kind of watching for information. I'm just trying to, you know, absorb things in the match, whether it's, you know, feedback on my bets or whatnot, or something that I've seen in the spreadsheets that I want to see on film. And this is one where I just like throw all that out and I'm like, I'm going to enjoy this because we've had so many epic ones lately. And I think the thing for me that's really fun is I normally don't get super caught up with this stuff. And I mean, it's Liverpool. Like, I'm an Everton fan. Like, I'm not exactly rooting for Liverpool over here, but the whole thing with this being the little engine that could, you know, Kanate gets hurt in the Euro Cup game today. He now might be a doubt for that match. Alexander Arnold's out. Allison's out. Mo's been out. Szoboszlai's been out. Like Klopp's last season, the big behemoth City is catching steam and KDB's back and Haaland's getting back in form. And if they hold on, man, it would be really cool. I think it would be one of the coolest titles. You know, obviously Leicester's is amazing, but they would be doing it in a year where you have three elite teams in Arsenal, City, and Liverpool themselves. You know, Leicester's title, not to devalue it at all because it's amazing, but that was definitely a down year for the Premier League team, especially with the total number of points that they won the league with. So, I mean, they're having to operate at a high level to be two other elite top five teams in the world with this injury crisis. It's hard for me to just go into this game and be like, yeah, I'm just going to watch this for information.
I know. Well, you talked a lot about Liverpool's injuries, but Nunez is back. Szoboszlai is back. Salah is back. They all played in Europa today. They're looking good. You mentioned some of the ones that they have. But this is certainly much brighter than it was 2 weeks ago. So heading into the City matchup, I mean, City has a plus in front of them, plus 125. It's not like Caesar just said Liverpool's got no chance whatsoever here. What do you see as the path to victory for Liverpool? Is they're a little bit depleted? Is they're a little bit down, but they're getting some of their firepower back? How do they actually win this game?
I mean, I think for them, they're going to have to win in transition. Like, it's going to have to be the turnovers in transition that catch a City unsettled. You know, the one thing that has stuck in my mind a lot this year with City is Pep created a team with that back three and Stones and Rodri in a midfield two in front of it, where he basically was playing Akanji and Diaz and Nathan Nathan, I think is when it's Dutch. Ake. Along that back line. And this year, he switched to a back four almost solely to just get Walker back on the pitch. A 33-year-old Kyle Walker, by the way. And Walker has definitely looked like he's finally lost the step. And so if they lose this title by a point, I am very curious to see if there's going to be any type of national media recourse over, you had this thing that over the last 14 games of last year, absolutely suffocated opponents. You had found a thing, and then you kind of just felt like you needed to get your guy, Kyle Walker, back on the pitch. And so you went to a different formation. You let him play and let him get up the field. And now this game comes up. If he gets roasted in transition, and he looks like a guy that's 33 and has lost the step after being one of the most blazing fact counter-stopping fullbacks in the league, it is going to be an interesting narrative going forward as to what was Pep doing, tinkering with this thing that got them the treble last year.
It is an interesting point because they did win the treble last year. That Stones-Rodri combination. Like, I think in our season preview this year, I was like, how's City going to give up even 15 goals this year based on what we saw at the end of last year? Like, that defensive performance was unbelievable. They went out and they win the Champions League. They win everything. And then he goes out and messes with it. And so, like, are we watching something where Pep is just trying to prove his brilliance? Or is he just bored of winning all these titles and wants to win them in different ways? I don't quite understand it. You don't want to, like, you know, take shots at the king because you best not miss in that case. But, like, is his team just so dominant that he can win no matter how he coaches? Or is this some sort of tactical adjustment that's going to allow them to win another title where they wouldn't have won otherwise, where it seems like to you and I, they would have walked the league if they just kept playing the same way?
Yeah, I mean, part of it, I think, is Stones has had some injury issues. And part of it is Pep gets weird with center backs. Like, I mean, we saw it with Laporta. Like, Laporte was like his guy. Like, he brought him over, I think, for the, was it Bilbao? And he brought him over, and then Laporte was like their guy and center back. Like, it was him and Diaz. Like, that was the main central pairing. And then all of a sudden, the dude just like fell out of Pep's good graces. I mean, we saw the same thing with Cancelo. Cancelo played like 4,000 minutes the 1 year between all the competitions or something absurd. And then the next thing, he was like shipped off on loan, you know, when the January window came because he was feuding with Pep. So Pep does this. Like, it is, I mean, no one is perfect as a manager. You know, part of the thing with Pep that he, I think, maybe was overblown. Grace Robertson wrote a wonderful thing on this. You know, Pep's Champions League tinkering that have cost him champ titles and all that. He does tinker, though. I don't think it's to the degree that it was made out to be when he, you know, wasn't winning a random knockout tournament every year. But I do think that there is something to that, Toby. I think this is something that we can look at and say, this is kind of the king being like, I'm so smart, I'm just going to 4D chess this, and it may come back to bite them. And this might be the game, because Liverpool is not going to win this game with settled possession. They are going to win it in transitions. And what that formation did for them last year is it did the thing that Pep has been trying to do his entire career as a manager, eliminate counters against this possession team. And if Liverpool lights them up on a couple and it wins them this match, oh boy, there will be a lot of conversations being had about that.
Well, the funny thing is I actually want Liverpool to win this game just so I could triple down on my City future. Because, like, even if Liverpool wins this game and that would spike the odds, like, Liverpool did not look good against Forest last week. Forest was the better team in the first half. And they had to get this, like, last second winner in order to avoid dropping points to a team that is borderline relegation. So I know that they ended up getting the 3 points, but Forest should have cleared that ball. They had no business giving up that goal at the end. I don't want to be a hater, but, like, what the F? Like, that looked like a straight up gift to Klopp. And when you're struggling against Forest and you got to take on City a week later, yes, I think it's romantic to think they can catch them on the counter. Yes, I think it's romantic to think that Klopp is going to continue to have this magical run to the end. But when it comes down to, like, place my dollars on the line, like, City has a plus number in front of it. How do I look at City with a plus number and don't rush through the window?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this, as we've talked about too, is these teams play way too much. And so the outcome of one match is great. And a fresh starting 11 or, you know, a close to full strength starting 11 is all great. But with as many matches that are going to be left for both these teams between the European competitions and the Premier League, depth is going to still matter. Like, they're going to have to worry about who is going to, it's a war of attrition still. And so, I mean, the Forest game to me was interesting at first, because I was like, okay, you know, I think it was like Gakpo and Diaz and Elliott were out there. And yeah. I'm like, all right, this is the game. Like, this is the one where we're going to see that they're just too banged up to keep this going. You know, they're going to drop points here. They're not going to be able to recover from it. And then I looked at the numbers. And the crazy part about it was, is they had over two goals were expected goals worth of chances in that match. Do you know what their post shot XG was in that? The actual, like, where the ball wound up on frame after it left somebody's foot in a good shooting position?
I do not.
0.02. They what? Just missed everything. They missed the frame. Matt Sells post shot XG and that match, or sorry, it was 0.2 from two goals worth of chances. He only saw 0.2 get on his goal frame. So it was one of the most wayward shooting performances probably of the year. And so that made me think, like, maybe they're not dead yet. I'm still taking the City money line in this game. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I would have enthusiastically rushed to any window. I would have been texting you for a loan. If that Forest game had kind of matched what I thought the eye test was telling me, I would have been like, that's it. They're done. This is the start of the slide. You're giving me City a plus money against this broken down team. I'm rushing to the window. I'm taking the plus money. I'm still going to do it, but I'm definitely not as enthusiastic after I kind of saw the numbers under there too. It was just a really weird game that you have that many great chances and so few of them end up being dangerous on the goal frame.
That's a good point, though. If you're going to talk about depth being so important and how Liverpool had to kind of play through rotation last week, City is healthy and they are just frightening. Like, yeah, we skipped over it a little bit. Like, Phil Foden at plus 350 for player of the year is outright unfair. Because Phil Foden at the beginning of the year, we love him. We're like phone stands. We've been pushing him ever since we started doing this podcast, but we wouldn't have said this is a guy who's going to outstrip Haaland. He's going to outstrip KDB. He's going to outstrip all these guys. And the fact that he's risen that far this year and everybody's esteem and performance, and now Haaland is by the odds their third most important player when he's the greatest goal scoring weapon in the world, is nuts. And so like, I'm happy to take the money line this game. I'm happy to take them on the futures. In fact, Brett, what do you think their odds are to win another treble? I looked this up right before the show.
Oh, God. I have no idea, but I have to imagine it's probably not, you're not getting great juice on it, because, I mean, they're looking like the favorite in all three competitions.
900, baby. You are getting great juice.
Oh, wow.
Plus 900.
I thought it would be like City to win another treble.
No, 900 to win another treble. So, like, I think their best chance is the Premier League just because of how fair it is. And, you know, it's not a knockout tournament. They have 38 games to end up 1 point ahead of their competitors. And I think that path for Liverpool has a pretty decent chance of semi-closing by, you know, the end of the day on Sunday. And then you're talking about 9-1 for an FA Cup and for a Champions League. I like that one quite a bit. I mean, I know that back-to-back trebles would be insanity, but I thought the odds would be shorter than those at 9-1 for them to win it again.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing that you bring up too about Foden is, like, he is such an interesting dude in the way that we have kind of talked about him throughout the years. And I'm not saying you and I specifically, I think the collective soccer watching apparatus is, like, he came kind of into as the wunderkind at the end of the Aguero era, right? So he has this, you know, one of the best Premier League strikers that we've ever seen. He's so his rise is sort of overlooked by the tail end of that. You know, then when it looks like it's about to maybe transition to where he's going to be the guy, KDB takes this incredible leap into being one of the most creative 2 year stretches of soccer that we've ever seen. And then the goal-scoring Norwegian brute comes along with Jeremy Doku, who, by the way, remember when he came over and he first started playing, he was lighting it up. You know,
He's still lighting it up. He cooks everybody every time he gets on the field, and he can barely get on the field because he's so freaking good.
Yeah, and, you know, and Jack Grealish has been, you know, was the big money transfer that came in, and then Grealish came on during the stretch last year. So it's like, it's crazy to think, when you look at Foden's odds for player of the year, that he's also still kind of like the forgotten man. Like, he has withstood so many new, bright, shiny objects, the rise of Rodri, the acquisition of Erling Haaland, like, and then here's Foden just being one of the best players in the Premier League this
year. And he's suddenly getting his flowers in the last couple of weeks. Yeah. And as I said, shot up with those odds. All right.
So he's also only 23. That's the crazy part. He's only 23. It feels like we've been talking to this dude for a decade. He's 23. He's just entering his soccer prime.
City is just disgusting. So we're both taking them on the money line at the plus number. What are you going to do in the prop market?
Stealing from you. You like to play psychological warfare with me. So here's the return favor. City to win and both score plus 225, buddy. Right back at you.
Oh, somebody's been listening. I've been giving that out on Trending. I've been giving it out on here. I've been giving it out on my phone, and I've got more money as a result. So,
unfortunately, I am your producer, so I hear all the times that you give it out.
Well, it is one of my favorite plays right now, so kudos to you for using it against me. I wish I could tail that. I wish this was trending and I could, but I can't. But I've got a new one, Brett, for a very special game. I did some very special research, a bet I've never given out in our history together on Covered in Glory. I have a parlay of the City money line plus Rodri 90-plus passes. Ooh. You can bet 90-plus passes for Rodri, pair with the City money line, and it gets you all the way to plus 262, Brett. I love this bet. Rodri has had 90-plus passes in 21 out of 25 games this year, in which he's played at least 85 minutes, and he averages 111. So you look at that, and you think about the style of play here, where City is most likely to dominate the ball, Liverpool is most likely to kind of try to catch them on the counter, and most of that is going to flow back and forth through Rodri again and again and again. So I don't see a scenario where they blow out Liverpool and he, like, you know, goes and sits down 70 minutes into the match. I think he plays the full 90. And I think because of the styles, the ball's going to flow through him over 100 times. And I'm able to double my City money line from the plus 125 up to the plus 262.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great one, too, because the other thing that will happen is if Liverpool nick an early goal, they will be far more inclined to just sit back. And I wouldn't necessarily sit back. They're an aggressive pressing team. They're going to still press. But it won't be that frenzied, all-out aggression. And Rodri will be the fulcrum. And the fulcrum and City it gets a ton of touches because they just dominate the ball so much. So I think that's a really interesting thing. And I think you're going to be in great shape if Liverpool scores early or that game stays like nil-nil for a while where Liverpool is... Yeah. Is sort of pinned back and okay with it a little bit.
And if you think that this game goes like a lot of City games go that are like big matches, I've seen them do it with Chelsea year after year, right? Where like you have all this firepower on the field, but it ends up being a bit of a defensive struggle for a long period of time. If you want to have City and have City to win or tie, you can still get that at a plus number by tying it to Rodri. So City plus 0.5, Rodri 90 plus passes is plus 131. And then you can get that nil-nil 1-1 draw still at plus money for City.
Yeah, I like it. That's you went deep. I like this. This is Toby had a big match and you rose to the challenge. All you right. Came up with a whole brand new thing. Look at this.
Well, apparently I gave out two great bets because you stole one from me.
Yeah, true. I actually thought we were going to have the same one, but then your greatness shone through one more time.
I did not take that because I'm willing to fade Liverpool. Liverpool zero goals is too much in the range of outcomes for me to jump on that. And I don't see a consolation goal because City also has to play for a goal differential in the title race. And so I think that this is one match where they can't switch off for the full 90, but we'll see. All right, we spent a ton of time on that match. It's well-deserving of it, but let's rip through the rest of it. Although we do have another kind of heavyweight tilt match on the slate. But we're going to start not at that game. Very much not a heavyweight match. We are going to go to Manchester United, 6th at 44 points, versus Everton, 16th at 25 points. This game is Saturday at 7:30 a.m. United is minus 110 at Caesars. Everton is plus 280. The draw is plus 270. United minus half a goal is minus 115. Everton is minus 115. So, Brett, we have not talked about Everton since they got 6 points back. Do you want to go ahead and talk about it as an Everton fan, getting the 6 points back, what it means for the season?
Well, I mean, immediate thing is it's just a relief from being dragged into the relegation race, which I think is great. You know, I mean, that would be devastating for a club that's already experiencing their financial stupidity problems. And so to be removed from that, I think that the team that gets the worst of it is Brentford, as they go from a team that had maybe a little bit more of a buffer to someone that now has serious risks of relegation. And so I think this is something that's going to be interesting, as Brentford and Forest are probably the least happy of the two clubs that saw Everton get those points back, because they lost a huge buffer between them and Luton Town.
There's still no chance Everton goes down. You think they see this through this season with the 6 points?
Their underlying numbers have been pretty strong. It's backed by they're playing their decent young guys. Jared Branthwaite's been pretty good for them. I mean, Forest has like 800 players, and I don't think any of them are very good. So I think Forest to me is probably the worst. You know, Brentford, we're going to talk about them in a little bit. They're interesting, and I think, you know, we've championed them as one of the smarter teams in the league, but there's a little bit of a kind of a elephant in the room when we talk about their brilliance in terms of what they've done with this payroll to stay up. But there are some issues there with them. So I don't think Everton's going to be at risk, but you know, soccer's a weird thing, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin can't finish this year. So
amazing. It's going to be amazing if Forest gets a point reduction and Luton stays up. I'm kind of rooting for that scenario.
Absolutely. Ross Barkley, another year for Ross the Boss in the Premier League. Let's go, baby. Luton Town all the way. Get Forest out of here with them and their weird managerial choices and player personnel decisions. Get them down.
Can we relegate United instead? I'm so glad we talked so much about City and Liverpool, because that means I don't have to say much about this game. They were embarrassing against City. They were nowhere even in their class in that derby. I'm a little bit tired of watching them, a little bit tired of talking about them. So I'm going to back Everton this week on the double chance at -115 for no other reason but for spite. I don't see any reason that I should actually back United at this point. And Everton has been just frisky enough for me to lay down that money on even odds.
Yeah, I mean, I went all the way up to the Everton money line because, you know, I've talked about this before on the show. I have been Jesse Pinkman constantly being like, they can't keep getting away with this. And then in the derby, Rashford scores in like the first 10 minutes, and he's like the eighth or ninth minute. And I'm like, no, this is not happening. Like, they're not going to get away with this again. And then they ended up just getting annihilated. I think they got outshot 28 or 27 to 3 or 4. It was something absurd. It was like a 20 plus shot margin. And for me, it was just this huge relief after this whole stretch in which they have outrun their underlying numbers and they kept getting draws and they kept sneaking out wins, to see them go up and me sitting there going, this is not happening again. They're not going to do this again. They can't keep getting this lucky. And then the City machine being like, you know what? You're right, Brett. They're not going to keep getting this lucky. So I actually went all the way up to the Everton money line because I am in full fade United mode. I just think that they are such a mediocre team masquerading as a big top six club. So Everton has done enough. The Calvert-Lewin finishing problem is a huge issue for them. You know, they went to Beto. He missed a penalty in their last match against West Ham, who beat them pretty soundly, by the way. So, I mean, the striking problems and the goal scoring for Everton are going to be a problem in open play. The Sean Dyche way, the Burnley way that they've done it, is between Branthwaite and Tarkowski, you're going to chip up on goals and set pieces. I think that's going to be enough to do it. I also think that with United's penchant for screwing things up, you don't want to play a team that's good at set pieces. And so I do think that could be, it was very tempting for me to try to throw out a center back scores bet at you, but I am already in a slide. So I didn't want to go like +900 on James Tarkowski today, but I am going to take the money line, but I am going to take the both the score no draw at +135, because I think that this match is going to have goals in it. Everton have been a little bit more aggressive in the press. United has been able to create chances, but they also can't stop them. So I think no matter who wins, it will be a multi-goal affair.
I'm on the other side. My prop is actually the under 2.5 +115. Everton has 7 goals in their last 11 games. United were terrible against City outside of the Rashford Thunder Bastard, as we already discussed. So it feels to me like the Everton range is 0-1 here and United is 0-2. So they both have to max out for, in my calculation, for me to lose this. And I just like my odds that this is going to be a much lower scoring match that I'll be happily to sleep through and spend my Saturday morning some other way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm probably doing the same thing, even though I technically support Everton. but no, I mean, I could see that. But this game, actually, my gut reaction to this, my heart pick and trendy, so to speak, would be that I kind of feel that this one is going to go off the rails a little bit. I actually think that this game is going to be a little bit bonkers because Everton is more aggressive than Sean Dyche's Burnley were. They've had some finishing issues, missing penalties. Calvert-Lewin's finishing has been really poor this year. And United are terrible at the back. I mean, We know why.
I also know Onana is like wandering so far out of his box. He was borderline offsides at one point against City. I have no idea what that guy's doing crossing midfield, but here we are.
He probably doesn't trust his defense to the point where he feels like maybe he needs to break up the counterattack instead of letting the shot come in. I could see this being a dud, but I also could see this going off the rails. My gut's telling me that it's going to be the other way, though.
Let's get back on the rails with the game we actually want to talk about, which is Arsenal third at 61 points versus Brentford 15th at 26 points. This game is Saturday at 12:30 p.m. Caesars has Arsenal minus 450, Brentford plus 1,100, the draw plus 525. Arsenal on the adjusted goal and a half is minus 150, Brentford is plus 120. So, Brent, my question to you, we spent so much time talking about the title race between Liverpool and City in their matchup. We mentioned a little bit in the player of the year discussion, but is Arsenal actually this good? Because if Arsenal is actually this good, where they're going to be just wrecking every single team they play, aren't they the best futures bet right now? Like City at minus 110, it has a minus in front of it, and like it's probably where I'm going to gravitate. But Arsenal at plus 330 when they are in this form, you can make a clear argument that that's the better value.
Yeah, I mean, this has been odd. I mean, part of it is they've looked really good lately. And it started with the Liverpool match in which they annihilated a Liverpool team down three of its four best players. And then they played West Ham. They annihilated them. West Ham's not very good. Then they played Burnley. We don't even want to talk about Burnley on the show because they're that terrible and boring. Newcastle, who's in their own slide, and then Sheffield is the second worst team in the Premier League. So there has been a little bit of a schedule bias here, I think, for us, because the game that really stood out to me among that stretch was the Porto match, where they've been dog walking these Premier League teams, and then they looked awful against Porto. I mean, they looked terrible. Like the deflected goal was kind of unlucky. It probably should have been a 0-0 draw, but that to me, it's one of those things where you get a bunch of evidence that something is pointing you in one direction, but then one little clue, the Porto match, is like giving you reservation, because I'm with you. They have looked so good in the Premier League that you kind of want to bet them. And in that, you can only beat who's in front of you, and they have handled their business and then some against some of these bad teams. But something about that Porto match is telling me I need to have a little bit of reservation about their chances to win the title this year. And, I mean, the one thing I will say, though, is against teams like Brentford or teams in the bottom half of the table, you need to juice up the Arsenal clean sheet win to about minus 180 for me not to take it anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a fair point, like, about the schedule. Like, Sheffield, I take notes every game. I, like, write down the starting lineup and write down the interesting parts of the formation and things like that. Sheffield, I just wrote, doesn't matter, ? instead of running a single player down. And, like, 5 minutes in, it turned out the answer was no, it did not matter. That game was embarrassing. It was a training simulation come to life. It was so stinking horrible. But it did make me think that Arsenal is just a bit of a juggernaut. So, like, if you're taking clean sheet wins at minus 180 and they have 31 goals, literally they have 31 goals in seven league games in 2024, they look just absolutely stunning at this particular moment of time. So given all that, give them to me on the adjusted versus a Brentford team that did do well against my Chelsea, but has not done well against actual relatively powerful soccer teams here in the Premier League.
Yeah, and here's the thing that we have to talk about with Brentford. We've given them a lot of props. I think, you know, whatever that was, time all blends together when we were giving our which teams should you support spiel for maybe new soccer fans that were coming into the show. You know, we talked about Brentford as being one of the teams that if you appreciated smart stuff, you would gravitate toward a team like Brentford. Well, the thing about Brentford is their smartness, their intelligence has come in the form of on-field strategy, the different ways they attack set pieces, probably how they organize their defense. Their player acquisition has been sneaky bad. I mean, Vitaly Yanal is their outfield player with the most minutes this year. He is not an objectively good Premier League player. He is a below average Premier League player. You know, they've kind of missed on guys like the Mbeumo injury has been huge for them because they've missed on some guys to kind of juice up the attack. The other problem with them right now too, and this is like, we've talked about this, the expected goals on off stuff is so noisy in soccer. I'm not even sure that you can make an actionable analysis from it, but they've been bad since Tony has been back on the pitch for them, which is concerning to say the least. So for me, the Arsenal minus 1.5 is where my money would go, because I am extremely concerned about where this Brentford team is. And I said I would take clean sheet wins up to minus 180. It's only minus 115. So you better book me for that one as well.
I do like that one a lot. I'm going to the prop market to Arsenal to score in both halves at minus 120. Because as I mentioned, they're just rattling off goals right now. 31 in the 7 league games since the calendar turned over. And in 6 of those 7s, they've scored in both halves. As they jump on teams early, they jump on them late, they jump on them always. Brentford is also giving up a ton of goals right now. And it's not just to Poole and City who did this to them recently. It was also to Forest and freaking Wolves. And worst of all, Chelsea. They cannot stop anyone. They cannot stop them early. They cannot stop them late. They cannot stop them at any time. Put it together. Minus 120 is nowhere near enough for me to stay away from that. And I will have that in my 5-pint and in my book slip at Caesars.
Yeah. I mean, I am very pro Arsenal for this matchup. I'm looking forward to them absolutely annihilating Brentford and us being like, okay, here comes Arsenal. And then Porto knocks them out of the Champions League like 3 days later. So that'll be fun.
It'll be fun.
It'll be a fun stretch.
Okay. I'm also pro our sponsors, so let's go ahead and take our break here and come back with the last two games.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Brett, we are back, and let's get to the other really important game for this weekend. It is Aston Villa, fourth at 55 points, versus Tottenham, fifth at 50 points. This game is Sunday at 9 a.m. Villa is plus 135, Spurs are plus 160, the draw is plus 300. Villa minus half a goal is plus 130, the Spurs are minus 170. And I keep saying this is a really important matchup because after Newcastle and United completely gacked it in the Champions League and after Villa struggled in the Conference League today, it is not guaranteed England is going to get the new fifth Champions League spot based on the coefficient calculation that's being done. So this is a potential 6-pointer for automatic qualification to the Championship League. And Spurs are heading into it on a high note. That Madison scoop last week, oh my Lord, Brett, that creative, that inventiveness under that much pressure for them to come back and win that game. That was such an amazing play by Madison. White Hart Lane came undone. It was such a great moment for them to enter this matchup. But to me, I am having my own Jesse Pinkman moment because I do not see how they can keep freaking getting away with this. So what are you thinking about going into this matchup? I know which way I'm leaning, but I want to hear it from you.
I'm leaning towards Villa. I mean, this is a really tough one to handicap. I should answer that first. This one's tough because it seems like Villa's shtick under Unai Emery, which is play a crazy high line and then don't really press all that aggressively, is kind of coming back to bite them. It is a very weird mixture. I mean, Villa are like middle of the pack in terms of passes per defensive actions. They're just behind United and just in front of Wolves, but they play a super high line. And that is just, and you see it in their expected goals against in the last like 5 or 6 matches. It is, I was kind of wondering when that was going to come home to roost. And I think it's starting to come home to roost a little bit, but Spurs have also not been good. We kind of thought Madison would be a little bit of a boost for them, but their underlying numbers have not been great with him back either. And I think part of it is it's not an indictment on him or what he does or floor ceiling stuff. I think a lot of it is their style. Basuma's been in and out of the lineup. He's a key piece for them. So I kind of looked at this game as Villa has just generally been the stronger team and you're getting them at plus 145. So I guess Aston Villa, there's my super sharp analysis. I think you're getting two teams that are showing their warts. And I think I'm going to back Villa because they've just been the slightly stronger team throughout the year.
Yeah, it's hard for me to handicap because the Spurs have hearts as big as their defensive holes. And so like you try to put the two things together, you don't know which way that in a single game is going to lead over like the portfolio. I keep thinking that it's going to catch up with them. And then somehow they keep pulling these games out of their butt late in the second half. And so do they have another one in them? Maybe, maybe not. So, I mean, like, I can't just not give a pick on this show, but I had a hard time with it as well. And if I think when I finally had the time, it's like, okay, you know, your wallet's out, you have to put your money down. Who are you going to put it on? I'm going to go with Unai Emery to find a way to keep the Spurs from getting away with it yet again in a really important game. So I'm going to take them here after they won 2-1 in the reverse fixture. I think they can do it again. But I will say I am terrified of the draw in this game, Brett, because in a six-pointer like this, the team with a five-point edge like Villa has wins with a draw. And so, like, I would love to actually play the double chance for Villa at, like, plus or minus 200, but that doesn't look sexy enough in a show like this. So at the end of the day, I'm going to have to take that plus 145 and hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the way to play it. I just think in a game like this, and I would recommend for when you're putting your actual money down, probably stay away maybe even from the line and the spread in this game and focus more on the props that involve goals. So I think that would be the best, but I do think in general, we're kind of in the same place as you're trusting the manager. I mean, Emery has, you know, some Europa League titles to his belt. He's clearly doing something right. This Villa team has spent a lot of money, but they definitely are still outperforming their resources. So, you know, I think you got to back him here for those reasons alone. It's not, you know, something that makes me super comfortable, but I think that's where the logic kind of points you to go.
Well, I feel much more comfortable with my prop bet. I'll hear yours in a second, but mine is half of the first Tottenham goal being in the second at plus 200. And did you know, Brett, this is surprising given the number of Spurs goals that happened. Did you know the only Spurs player to score in the first half of 2024 is Richarlison? And he's out. So I think it's the only guy to score in the first half this year. I think they are too extreme to get shut out entirely. And so you could play the under on goals in the first half at minus 105, but doing it this way that they will score in the second half after getting shut out in the first half gets you all the way to plus 200. So you get double the value. And against Palace last week, they had a million chances in the second half after not having many early. I think this game could find the same pattern. Maybe, you know, Villa's up and it's a consolation goal. Maybe it's not, I don't know. But I think plus 200 is really good value. And by the way, the only chance they did have in that Palace match early was Timo Werner getting one-on-one with the keeper and failing to round him and blowing it again. He just continues to deliver week after week. He warms my heart. He is the only constant in the Spurs that I can actually predict happening besides chaos is that Timo will blow a gilded edge chance at least once a game. Never change Timo.
Classic Timo. Yeah, I mean, I like that. Mine went immediately. I kind of teased it a little bit when we were talking about some of the player futures here, but Ali Watkins is plus 125 as an anytime goal scorer. And against the way the Spurs play, he's got really good movement. He times his runs really well. He ends up just being right place, right time. He's clearly taken his game to another level. I don't love the juice in a lot of anytime goal scorers. So I kind of started gravitating to first-time goal scorers, especially in matches I think won't have very many goals. This one I think is going to have some goals. So I'm going to take Watkins. I think he's the most productive player on the pitch in terms of the end product and finishing and the chances that he's going to get. And he's a plus number in a game that could have up to 4 or 5 goals in it. So I went Watkins. We'll see what happens. Plus 125. I'm hoping that one will hit for me because it's definitely the thing that I feel most comfortable betting out of this match.
Scored 5 times in his last 3 games, wide open Spurs team. I like that one. The other guy I like, Brett, is Leon Bailey. Leon Bailey is plus 210 on the anytime, and he seems to be the exact type of player who could crush a Spurs high line, just one ball over the top where he uses his wheels out on the wing and gets in and scores. And so I think those two are both good value in a game that is going to have goals. One game left. Oh, God, I almost wanted to do 4 games. I actually wanted to do 3 games this week. I wanted to wrap right here and not do United or Chelsea, but here we are. Chelsea, 11th, 36 points versus Newcastle, 8th, 40 points, Monday at 4 p.m. Chelsea is minus 115, Newcastle's plus 260, the draw is plus 300. Chelsea minus half a goal is minus 120, Newcastle is minus 110. They suck. They're the suckiest sucks who ever sucked. Fade Chelsea, Newcastle minus 110. Your witness, Brett.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to not say otherwise. They are such a frustrating team, too. I'm sure for you to follow. They've been a frustrating team to bet. They've been a frustrating team to figure out. So yeah, I ended up in the same spot. I'm not happy with Newcastle, but I also kind of feel like Chelsea has played a bunch of matches. I mean, they had the cup final, they had a Premier League match, then they had the FA Cup, and then they had another Premier League match. And now they have this one coming up, and they are already dealing with some injury issues, especially with their attackers. Guys have been allowed to play a lot of minutes that they've had to play. I kind of feel like this would be a time that Cole Palmer maybe might slow down if there is a time, because he hasn't ever played this much in a season yet. But I think overall in the balance, it is way, 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 way too hard for me to trust Chelsea at this point.
Yeah, Chilwell went down. Chilwell's back in the training room.
There you go.
Another great update. So the teams that are ahead of Chelsea right now are Wolves, Brighton, Newcastle, West Ham, Man United, Tottenham, and that's from spots 10 to 5. Every one of those teams sucks. Every one of them, and Chelsea can't catch them. Chelsea cannot put together a consistent run of form that, even as those teams continue to lose and drop points week after week, Chelsea still sits at 11th. This is freaking embarrassing. As a fan who's watching every single minute, I cannot believe, after $1 billion and all the talent that they've allegedly put together, that they cannot get ahead of Wolves, that they cannot get ahead of this crappy West Ham team. They cannot get ahead of a Brighton team that's imploding. And here I am taking Newcastle, who has been god freaking awful for 3 months, to beat them or to tie them at Fortress Stamford Bridge. Like, the home crowd is turning against them. They're now actively rooting against Pochettino to return. They're chanting for his demise at games. And I just have to take anything for Newcastle right now in this market. There's no way I can continue to back Chelsea until next week after they beat Newcastle 3-0 and I declare them the greatest team in the world again. So in the prop market, I'm going with, this is just how dark it's gotten, Brett, I am going with an anytime goal scorer by the name of Tony Gordon. You might be familiar with his work. Tony Gordon, anytime goal scorer, plus 280. And the reason is not only has he scored in 3 of his last 4, Chelsea do not give up goals to the person you suspect to score them. It's not Ivan Toney or Haaland or Luis Diaz or Ollie Watkins. It's randos like Wurislev and Van Dijk and Rodri and Diaby. They're able to shut down the Isaks of the world, and then some other guy who scores twice a year steps up and breaks my heart. Tony Gordon is going to add to that legacy after I made fun of him for many years on this show, and I'm going to get 3-1 for him to do it on Monday.
Tony Gordon. King of the deflected goal. I actually went back to the well on this one, because as much as I don't trust Chelsea to win, I don't trust Newcastle to not concede a goal. So I am going back to a bet that is done well by me, and that's Cole Palmer. Mm-hmm. First goal scorer, plus 400 on this one. I think that Chelsea is going to shoot themselves in the foot, but I do think their range of outcome is 1 to 2 goals. Well, actually probably 0 to 2, heavy on the 1. I also don't think that they're going to be a total sieve against Newcastle. I think if Newcastle wins this match, it'll be with 1 or 2 goals themselves. So there won't be a lot of goals, which means I've started to prefer to play the first time goal scorer. If there's a match that has a huge potential, especially maybe as a 1-1 draw. So Palmer at 4-1, because he takes the penalties. That's where my prop bet money is going to go, because that Newcastle defense ain't fixing itself at any point this year.
Please don't say shoot yourself in the foot about Chelsea, because that's the only injury they don't have yet. And they will tell you to hold my beer and pull out the firearm if they get an idea in their head. All right, let's go ahead and do the 5-pipe and get out of here, so I don't have to talk about Chelsea anymore. As I mentioned earlier, I did beat you in February, finally got back on the winning side of the ledger and got some drinks myself. March is a new month, and here's how I am starting it. I am in love with this Rodri bet, so of course I had to make it. City money line, Rodri 90-plus passes at plus 262. United at Everton, I'm putting my money where my mouth is to go opposite of you on how open that game will be. Under 2.5 at plus 115. Arsenal to score in both halves, minus 120. Half of first Spurs goal, second plus 200. And then give me Newcastle, baby. Let's go, you oil-soaked bastards. Plus half a goal, minus 110 at Stamford Bridge on Monday.
Awesome. All right, well, we got Everton United. I am going with both score no draw, plus 135. I'm doing the good team, good thing with Arsenal, both at minus 1.5 at minus 165. hate that juice, but all right. Arsenal clean sheet win at minus 115. That will be a 5-pint staple until they raise that line. And then I am taking the Ollie Watkins anytime goal at plus 125. And then I am going for the Toby special, City win, both score, plus 225 for my fifth and final pint as I hope to get back on track here in March.
All right, Brett. Well, worst of luck to you on those picks, even though I like several of them. We will be back next week. It is going to be a strange schedule week as the FA Cup has wreaked havoc with Premier League match week. But we will find something to talk about. So I hope that you really dig in on City and Liverpool. Enjoy it because it is the best game you are going to have for several weeks, where we will be back to find something to talk about with our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis. Enjoy the games, everyone.